Good morning and welcome to Whitehill this morning. It's great that you could be with us today. My name's Paul Hicks, one of the pastors here, and if you're new with us or visiting today, I'd like to offer you a very special warm welcome with us today. Well, it's been a big week, a couple of weeks in the life of the church, hasn't it? And it's also been a little bit of a big week in the Hicks household at home, because this week, Leanne and I celebrated 25 years being married together. And just, whilst I appreciate that, I really do, it would be remiss of me not to point out that you only get to see the best of me or any of me or my ability to help you is only because of the support I get from that beautiful woman over there. So perhaps we could say thank you to Leanne. Well, it's hard to believe, isn't it? It's the end of December, which means it's the end of 2018. And I am preaching bombshells this morning, aren't I? That it's the end of the year. And at the end of 2018, we start to think of all the things that we've done wrong in 2018 that we want to improve on for 2019. What are our New Year's resolutions going to be? What are we going to do differently? And some of us, our New Year's resolutions are, or should be, that we're not going to make any more New Year's resolutions. Second to that, we should stop hanging around with people that make New Year's resolutions, because they are painful in January, aren't they? You ring them up and say, do you want to go out for dinner? Oh, that'd be great, but I can't go where they serve gluten, wheat, food, water, because I'm on this new diet and that's painful. Or, you know, those people that's New Year's resolution. And you ring them up and say, let's go to the movies. And they say, oh, I can't. I'm on this New Year's resolution to lose 20 kilos and I have to go to the gym or something. Or the worst, the people who decide to give up coffee. Or they decide that they're going to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to go for a run every day. Now, they may reap the benefits, but we have to suffer through their mood swings during the day, don't we? New Year's resolution not to hang around with people in January who make New Year's resolutions. But as we start thinking about 2019, as we start to think about the hope that we have for 2019, I want to tell you about an idea this morning, an idea that changed the world. An idea that might be a good New Year's resolution for you as we come into 2019. Because this morning, I want to challenge you a little bit. I want to ask you a question this morning that I'd really love you to answer honestly. In fact, I'm going to ask you a question now that's going to sting perhaps just a little bit. And the question I want to ask you is, in your place that you frequent from Monday to Friday, are you really having an impact for Jesus? I mean, are you really having an impact? I don't mean that you bake your beautiful scones once a year with a little cross on the emblem once a year for a special treat. I mean, are you having life-changing conversations with people where you frequent Monday to Friday for Jesus? Because if we were to be able to take a spiritual thermometer of this place, I don't know how that would look. And I have found that over the last couple of weeks just a little bit confronting to me as one of your pastors. What are we like away from this place? And if you're sitting there thinking, Paul, who do you think you are standing up there asking that question? Who do you think you are? Well, good, good. Because if I'm challenging you, we might change. I listened to an article the other day, and I was talking about which of Jesus' miracles was the most disruptive. Which one of Jesus' miracles caused the most commotion? And at the end of the article, they talked about that they believed that it was Lazarus, the raising of Lazarus from the dead, caused the most disruption. For two reasons. One, Lazarus was dead. Dead, not just dead. He was 4 days dead. And Jesus raised him from the dead. But second to that was the impact that the raising of Lazarus from the dead had on the last days of Jesus' ministry. The impact that raising Lazarus from the dead had on Jesus' ministry as we come into the Passover. You see, because Jesus and his disciples had got word that Lazarus was sick. And much to the surprise of the disciples, Jesus said, no, we won't go yet. We're not going to Bethany to see my friend yet. We're going to stay where we are. And then 3 days after they'd originally received the information that his friend Lazarus was sick, Jesus said to his disciples, all right, we're going to head to Bethany now to see my friend Lazarus. So off they go, and when they come to Bethany, they find out that Lazarus is 4 days dead. And the Bible tells us that Jesus wept for his friend, and that he thought and he said it would be a great opportunity to show his power. And Lazarus rises Jesus raises Lazarus from the dead. And a lot of people, the Bible tells us, saw Lazarus being raised from the dead and became believers. But also a couple saw it and they went straight back to the Pharisees and the teachers to report to them what they had seen with Lazarus being raised from the dead. And the Pharisees and the teachers, well, they were worried. This was not good. Because they thought that if Jesus could unite these people, that Rome would think that there was an uprising and they would come and crush it. But more importantly, the Pharisees and the teachers were concerned that if Jesus united these people, they might work out they don't need the Pharisees and the teachers. And they worked out that they might not need the temple. In the aftermath of Lazarus being raised from the dead and the news getting back to the Pharisees and the teachers, we pick up this part of the story in John 11:53, where we read that from that day on, they were committed to killing Jesus. For this reason, Jesus no longer went out in public amongst Jews. The Passover was coming. The Passover would be here in about a week. And Jesus was outside Jerusalem because it was too dangerous for him to go into Jerusalem. But he wanted to be there for the Passover, so he had to be careful. And at this point in Jesus' ministry, he was getting very popular. Wherever he went, crowds flocked to see him, crowds to hear him. Maybe I could just touch him. And this made it difficult for them to arrest Jesus. But it also made it difficult for Jesus to stay inconspicuous. And in this time, some interesting conversations took place between Jesus and his disciples on the road. On the road, as they travelled around the vicinity of Jerusalem, just waiting for the Passover, some very interesting conversations took place between Jesus and his disciples. And today I want to have a look at three of these conversations that took place outside Jerusalem between Jesus and his disciples. Because on three occasions, Jesus predicts what's going to happen to him. And each time we get a similar response. And conversation number one, as we look at conversation number one, that in all the commotion of all the people, and Jesus is trying to avoid being arrested. He's preparing for the Passover. And Jesus takes his disciples aside into a quiet place because he wants to do some teaching. We don't know exactly where it would have been, but I suspect that Jesus would have taken them into a garden to talk to them. And the disciples and Jesus are in this garden, and we pick it up in Mark 9:31. And he said to them, "The Son of Man is destined to be betrayed and to turn over to those who will execute him. But after 3 days, he will rise again." But the disciples didn't have a clue what he meant, and they were too embarrassed to ask Jesus to explain it. Must have been a strange teaching for the disciples. I mean, this wasn't the first time that Jesus had spoken like this. And the last time Jesus spoke like this, Peter rebuked him. And Jesus said to Peter, "Get away from me, Satan." Quite a confronting thing to be said. So no one was going to question Jesus. And they'd seen Jesus perform all these miracles, and Jesus was always doing and saying these strange things, and they were on a high because they'd seen such miracles like Lazarus being raised from the dead. This was Jesus. Who could hurt Jesus? This concept of Jesus being hurt was foreign to them. And Jesus was always telling them these weird stories anyway. And I'm sure that this is not the first time that they didn't really understand what Jesus was saying. And then after this teaching, they get back on the road to go to Capernaum. And it says in verse 33, "Then they came to Capernaum." So straight after this conversation in the garden. And as soon as Jesus was inside the house, he asks the disciples, "Hey, guys, on the road there, what were you arguing about?" At which point, no one said a word. Because they'd been arguing about which one of them was going to be the greatest. And Jesus sat down and he called the 12 disciples to come around him. And he says to them, "If anyone wants to be first, he must be content to be last and become a servant to all." Become a servant? Become a servant? You've got to be joking, Jesus. There's no way I'm going to become a servant. I mean, the disciples knew what a servant was. Some of them had a servant in their family. Some had servants in their family. The disciples knew full well what a servant was. "Jesus, I'm one of your disciples. How could I become a servant?" That's crazy talk, Jesus. I can only begin to imagine the conversation that these 12 men must have had after this, suggesting that they should be a servant. Because this morning, I cannot explain to you how insulting and how ridiculous this would have been to those men. Because that was completely backwards to what they would have known. Because in the society of that time, you used your power, you used your influence, you used your money to leverage to get more. That's what society was like. It was backwards. This was how their society worked, that you leveraged what you had to get more. This concept of serving, that's not what we do. We want more, more. Not too dissimilar to where we frequent Monday to Friday, is it? Where we want to leverage to get more. The disciples had little comprehension of what Jesus was talking about, this concept of serving. But they're starting to get it by conversation number two. As we go into conversation number two, and we pick it up in Mark 10:32. And Jesus and his disciples were on the road that went to Jerusalem, and Jesus was leading them forward. And the disciples were filled with wonder and amazement and bravery. And those following along with him were very afraid. And as they approached the city, he took the 12 aside privately and told them what was going to happen. I want you to know that we are going to Jerusalem, where the Son of Man will be handed over to the ruling priests and religious scholars, and they will condemn him to death and hand him over to the Romans. And they will mock him. They will spit in his face, torture and kill him. And 3 days later, he will rise again. James and John, sons of Zebedee, approached Jesus and said, "Teacher, will you do a favor for us?" And Jesus so patiently, "Yeah, what do you want me to do for you?" "We want to sit next to you when you come into your glory," they said, "one at the right side and one at the left." And Jesus said to them, "You don't have a clue what you're asking of me. Are you prepared to drink from the cup of suffering that I'm about to drink? Are you able to endure the baptism of death that I'm about to experience?" And they replied, "Yes, we are able." Now the other 10 disciples overheard this and they became angry and they began to criticize James and John. And let's be really clear this morning. When it says they became angry, they weren't angry because of what Jesus just told was going to happen to him. They weren't angry because Jesus was going to be tortured. They were angry because these other two got in first. They wanted a piece of this new kingdom. They wanted to be at the top of this new kingdom, of Jesus' kingdom. And they're angry because these boys sold them out and thought about it first. And I can just imagine Jesus bowing his head and going, "I think I've picked the wrong guy." And he gets him off the road and under a tree. And it's time for a bit of a pep talk from Jesus. It's time for a halftime speech. And Jesus says, the verse 42, Jesus gathered them all together and said, "Those recognized as rulers of people and those who are in top leadership positions, well, they rule oppressively over their subjects. But this is not the example you are to follow." And I can imagine disciples saying, "Yes, we know. That's why we want to be number two and number three. We know that's how society works. And that's why we want to be number two and number three. We believe that the positions in your new kingdom, Jesus, are open and we want to apply for them." And Jesus continues. And I'm going to come to 7 words in a moment. 7 words that I would love you to commit to memory, to write down. Commit them to memory, because if you're a Christ follower here this morning, these 7 words should haunt you. Because as a pastor, they haunt me. These 7 words should disturb you. These 7 words should confront all of us here this morning. Because when I read these 7 words, I can just imagine Jesus sitting there and he's eyeballing me and he's eyeballing you. And Jesus is saying, "I know the society that you live in wants you to step on others to get more. I know in your workplace that it's accepted for people to cheat. I know the dishonesty. I know the expectations of you to speak ill of other people. I know the demands on you in your workplace to take anything by any means possible. I know that the society of this place on earth wants you to leverage what you've got to get more. But my kingdom, Jesus' kingdom, I have come to set up on earth is different. It's radical. It's upside down. And Jesus says these seven words. You are to lead by a different model. Jesus says, you are to lead by a different model. If you want to be the greatest one, then live as one called to serve others. The path to promotion and prominence comes by having the heart of a bond slave who serves everyone. For even the Son of Man did not come expecting to be served by everyone, but to serve everyone, to give his life as a ransom price in exchange for the salvation of many. Jesus says, you are to lead by a different model. If you remember nothing else from this morning, I'd love you to remember those seven words. You are to lead by a different model. And I asked you that confronting question at the beginning. I asked you, are you making a difference in your place Monday to Friday for Jesus? I asked you that question. And if you would be so gracious, perhaps I could rephrase that question. That in the place you frequent Monday to Friday, are you leading by a different model? In that place you frequent Monday to Friday, are you leading by a different model? Christ's model to serve. Back to the story. Can you imagine this conversation from the disciples? Because in conversation number one, Jesus asked them to be servants. At least servants got paid. Now he's asking them to be a bond slave. And you might be asking, what's a bond slave? And some translations use the word bond servant. And it came from the Greek word doulos. And doulos means to be subservient to, entirely at the disposal of your master. It means you're a slave. And here is their teacher teaching them to be a slave. Jesus is suggesting to these disciples, possibly 12 of the most famous men in Jerusalem at this time, that they are to be slaves to everyone. And you know what I think? I think the disciples are now starting to get what Jesus is talking about in this radical, this upside-down kingdom that he talks about. And we come into conversation number three, and we read in John 13, 1. Jesus knew that the night before the Passover would be his last night on earth before leaving the world to return to his Father's side. And all throughout his time with the disciples, Jesus had demonstrated a deep and tender love. And now he longed to show them the full measure of his love. And so he got up from the meal and he took off his outer robe and he took a towel and he wrapped it round his waist, which at this point I suspect the disciples panicked because they'd been on a high. They'd seen what's been going on. They'd seen what Jesus could do. They were famous. It was fantastic. And they were on a high and they forgot this one tradition of washing each other's feet, washing their feet before dinner. And these disciples, they had seen what Jesus could do with his hands. They had seen what those hands could do. Those hands could heal. Those hands could raise people from the dead. And now these hands were going to wash their feet. I think they would have panicked. And if you can imagine that scene, it takes some time to wash one person's feet. But Jesus washed 12 feet. Can you imagine what it would have been like in that room? And we come into verse 5. And then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' dirty feet and dry them with a towel. But when Jesus got to Simon Peter, he objected and he said, Lord, I can't. I've seen what your hands can do. I can't let you wash my dirty feet. You're my Lord. And Jesus replied, you don't yet understand the meaning of what I'm doing, but soon it will be clear to you. It was starting to become clear what Jesus was teaching. An idea that would change the world. An idea, a kingdom that is upside down. We read in verse 18, after washing their feet, he put his robe on and returned to his place at the table. Can you imagine the room, the silence, what it must have been like in that room? It would have been palpable. And all the disciples sat there and you could probably hear the water dripping out of the bowl. Such was the silence. And Jesus addresses his men in this beautiful moment, and he says, "Do you understand what I just did? You've called me your teacher and your Lord, and you're right, for that's who I am. So if I'm your teacher and Lord Paul, so if I'm your teacher and Lord Rachel, so if I'm your teacher and Lord Lauren, if I'm your teacher and Lord Jeff, if I'm your teacher and Lord Sue, and I have just washed your dirty feet, then you should follow the example that I have set and wash one another's dirty feet. Now do for each other what I have just done for you. I speak to you a timeless truth. A servant is not superior to his master, and an apostle is never greater than the one who sent him. So now put into practice what I have done for you, and you will experience a life of happiness enriched with untold blessing." This upside down kingdom, this concept that Jesus was teaching, this idea to serve others, well, after the resurrection, it was world changing. These disciples and their early followers, well, they modeled this to the T. They modeled their master's teaching. And we read in Acts, which is the second part of Luke, how that early church took this model and ran with it. The early forefathers set up this early version of welfare. They sold what they had to help others who didn't have anything. They fed the homeless. They served each other without question. It didn't matter if you were a Jew. It didn't matter if you were a Gentile. It didn't matter if you were a Greek-speaking Jew. It didn't matter. It didn't matter your race. It didn't matter your color. It didn't matter. If you needed help, they would help you. They would serve you. And none of the disciples wanted their teacher to think that they were getting too big for their boots. And this cult, this Christianity thing, this thing with no money, no power, no influence, no weapons, changed the world. And the very empire that wanted to destroy it eventually embraced Christianity as its religion. It was so radical. The Roman Empire had no concept of what it was to serve someone else. I mean, the Roman Empire was all about leveraging what you have to get more. And here were these people, these Christians, leveraging what they had to help others. It was upside down. That the men and women were leading by a different model that we still are influenced by some 2,000 years later. And our society is no different, is it? The place that you frequent Monday to Friday. The places you're in, you would see people use their wealth. You would see people use their power. You would see people use their influence to get more. To get more power, more money, more influence, more. And you and I are in these places. It's because some of you have businesses. Some of you here this morning have franchises. Some of you here this morning are teachers. Some of you here this morning are industry leaders in your field. Some of you here this morning are managers. Some of you here are workers. And Jesus says to you, and he says to me, that you are to lead by a different model. That you in your place are to lead by a different model. Jesus says to you, and he says it to me, when you think you're a big shot, when you think you've made it, when you think you're someone special, you just go and find some more feet to wash. If you want to make a difference in the place that you frequent Monday to Friday, if you want to have an impact on the people that you work with from Monday to Friday, lead by a different model. Rather than wanting to be served in your place, serve others. Have the mantra, how can I serve you? How can I help? What can I do to serve you? That we are called to lead by a different model. Can I tell you this morning that if you adapt this model in your place where you are Monday to Friday, that our church, White Hill, can change the world. We are called to lead by a different model. You join me in prayer this morning. Dear Heavenly Father, we come to you in prayer this morning.